All right, Alexander, let's do an update on the diplomacy that appears to be taking place with Project Ukraine. And we can also talk about an update on Nord Stream, or at least a German Spiegel investigative report on Nord Stream, which claims that the Ukrainian team, this team of divers, consulted the CIA in early 2022. And the CIA said, yeah, go for it. It looks good. We like it, they said. And then the CIA changed their mind and they tried to talk the Ukrainian divers out of it. And they were, they weren't going to provide money. Anyway, a whole story about Nord Stream. We'll get into it as the video goes along. Let's start things off with post-Geneva talks, Medinsky's tough position with Ukraine, the two-hour meeting that... Yeah. That developed after the talks concluded. Medinsky went back, and I believe now we know that he had a closed door meeting with Umerov and
Arakhamia.
Yeah. No Americans at this meeting. So anyway, let's start off there, and we'll work our way towards Nord Stream.
Right. Well, I think the first thing to say is that there was a lot of speculation about what would happen at the Geneva meeting. Many people said that Medinsky had been sent there basically to capitulate to the Americans and to agree to all the American demands and all of that, and that there would be a deal done which would be favorable to the US and to Ukraine. There was lots of speculation about this big deal that Dmitriev was negotiating with Witkoff. The Economist published this story that the Russians were offering a $12 trillion economic trade package to the Americans. Well, we said Medinsky is a well-known hardliner. The Ukrainians can't stand him. It looks far more likely that he's been sent to Geneva to put the hammer down, bring the hammer down until the Ukrainians, look, it's Istanbul Plus, and you need to hurry up and agree to that because we're not making any concessions on any point around it. And I'm going to say it because, if we don't say it, who is going to say it? We got it absolutely right. That is exactly what happened. We hear that the talks were very tense, that Medinsky didn't give an inch. He had Galuzin with him, who was the deputy foreign minister, who said who had previously floated the idea of putting Ukraine under foreign trusteeship, which presumably means Russian trusteeship. Apparently, that whole proposal was again floated over the course of this meeting. And the meeting went absolutely nowhere. We got reports about how everything stalled and the blame was all put by the Ukrainians and on Medinsky. But anybody who had been following our programs and listening to our analysis would not have expected any different outcome. And as for the story in The Economist about the Russians offering a $12 trillion trade package to the Americans in return for sanctions being lifted, Dmitriev has now said that's absolute fake news. Nothing like that was agreed at all or offered or proposed at all. So it looks like all of those reports, the ones in Bloomberg, the ones in The Economist about this trade package, are untrue. I suspect that they have an American provenance, by the way. But anyway, there it is. So that is what happened. Now, we do have this intrigue about this meeting that took place between Medinsky and the Ukrainians after the Americans left. And by the way, the way in which the Americans managed the negotiations, if you can even call them negotiations, they weren't negotiations. They were a face-off. Let's be quite clear about that. The way the Americans handled it was appalling. Witkoff, Kushner, going from one meeting with the Russians and the Ukrainians to another meeting with Arakchi, meeting with all the national security advisors from across Europe, whom Zelensky called in at the last moment. So you have people like Powell, Jonathan Powell, Starmer's national security advisor, floating around the Intercontinental Hotel with all of the other Europeans, trying to speak to the Americans, trying to barge into the meeting. Apparently, they wanted to join the discussions on the second day. The Americans' management of this whole process has been awful. But anyway, let's turn to this second meeting, this secret meeting, if you like, between Medinsky and the Ukrainians. Now, the people who were at this meeting, the three people, were Medinsky himself, Umerov, who is now officially the chief Ukrainian negotiator, and Arakhamiya, who was Ukraine's chief negotiator in the spring of 2022, and who negotiated with Medinsky the original Istanbul Agreement. I'm going to make a guess. I've been thinking about this meeting a lot. I'm going to make a guess that it was actually the Ukrainians who asked for this meeting. And I think they were taken aback by how tough Medinsky's position was during the talks. And I think that probably there was some instruction, maybe from Kiev, maybe from some of the Europeans, maybe from who knows whom, to try to see whether in private Medinsky might be a bit more accommodating, might be more willing to soften the Russian position than he was in public. And that's why the two chief Ukrainian negotiators were there. The meeting lasted for 2 hours. It's obvious to me that Medinsky gave absolutely no ground whatsoever. I think quite plausibly he passed on a message to the Ukrainians for Zelensky, maybe from Putin himself, saying it's Istanbul plus or nothing. Don't expect us to give any ground on any of these things. And then a few hours later, you start getting comments from Zelensky. Zelensky's clearly having a meltdown. He is unbelievably insulting. He's using four-letter words all over the place. I mean, it's one of the most astonishing performances, even by Zelensky's standards. And the obvious answer is that he was already unhappy about this meeting in Geneva. After the meeting took place, he's absolutely furious about it. And he feels that both the Americans and the Europeans have let him down. So that is my take of what happened in Geneva. The Russians didn't give an inch. They never have. The only big question about these negotiations and the talks is why the Russians are still persisting with them at all. It's a question that you ask in program after program. You're absolutely right to ask it. But the key thing to say is that contrary to all the rumors, all the speculations, all the endless debates that take place about Putin being prepared to give in, Dmitriev being prepared to cut these enormous deals with the Americans, in practice, when they're at the table, the Russians don't give an inch.
Yeah, Zelensky had a meltdown, big time meltdown. He discovered the word shit. That's right. He discovered that word all of a sudden. So he goes to Axios and he talks about history and shit. He doesn't like history. Obviously, Zelensky doesn't like history, and he discovered the word shit. And then he goes to Piers Morgan so that he can be comforted by Piers Morgan, who absolutely despises Russia and Putin. So he gets a friendly journalist there as well.
Yes.
And the Europeans are also having a meltdown, and they believe that if they use the trick of affirmations, the secret, you know, the book, The Secret, if they say it enough times, then it's going to come true. If they say that Russia is losing enough times, then it's going to manifest into reality. So now you have all of the Europeans giving interviews all across European media, all across British media, saying that Russia's losing. Actually, Russia's losing. Well, Russia's losing. Russia's only gained 1% of territory, or they've gained 0.01% of territory, or they have 10 million losses or 50 million losses. Stube is giving interview after interview saying this. So you have a complete meltdown taking place throughout the entire collective West. You know, the United States is also keeping this war going. The Europeans, in a way, get what they want in that they get the war, they keep the war going, which is what the Europeans believe is in their interest. They believe if they can drag this war out for 2 or 3 years, then Russia will be weakened to a point where they can then strike. I think that's my belief.
Yes.
That is the thinking that is taking place in Brussels, with the exception of Orban and Fico, who know what's really going on.
Yes.
I think a lot of the delusional people in the halls of Brussels and in the capitals of Europe believe that that 2-3 years, Russia will be significantly weakened for them to then make their move. It's crazy. It's delusional. But I don't know. You can give your opinion if you think that's a correct assessment of things. But the United States, for their part, they're keeping the war going, as evidenced in Trump's extension of the sanctions. If Trump was the peace president, if Trump really wanted to make a deal, business deal or geopolitical deal, with Russia, then he would not have extended these sanctions. Yeah, I know Congress would not let him, or Congress would do this and that, but he's the president. He's the tough guy. He's the man. He's the peacemaker. He's the negotiator in chief. Call him whatever you want. He could have said, you know what? I'm not going to renew the sanctions. I'm not going to extend the sanctions. He didn't. He extended the sanctions again for another year.
Exactly. That is exactly correct. I think you've summarized it perfectly, actually. The Europeans, as you say, policy by affirmation. Russia is losing. That's all they have. They can't say anymore. They probably come to believe in it themselves. I mean, they're telling this thing to each other all the time. And as for, you know, the idea, you know, we weaken Russia, we wait until 2029 or 2030, and then we swoop and they'll be so weakened that they're defenseless. It's probably the best way to describe that is as a rationalization rather than an actual, analyzed, thought through position. But it's one that they've come to believe too. I think this is the kind of mindset we now have. They are in total denial about the realities on the front lines. I read bizarre articles about how Ukraine has achieved the greatest counteroffensive since 2023 in Zaporozhye. I mean, it is so completely, you know, out of relation with reality anymore.
Uropke, Julian Uropke, even bought that.
No,
I mean, he was even saying this is fiction.
This is fiction. I was reading how, you know, in The Economist, that the Russian economy is about to implode. They are willfully now misrepresenting what Nabiulina said. I mean, I've read what Nabiulina actually said, the central bank, Russian central bank chair, which is pretty positive about the state of the economy, but they managed to invert it and make it say, oh, but what she really means is, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, this is their thinking. And they're never going to change, and they're never going to learn. And sometimes one gets the sense that, you know, the dark watches of the night, Meloni and Macron, say to themselves, my God, is this really playing out in that kind of way? But even they, when morning comes, come back and start repeating the same affirmations because they don't want to be expelled from the club. So this is where we are in Europe. The Americans, you're absolutely correct as well. The Americans, whatever the reasons, whatever the explanations, whether Trump really wants a deal with the Russians, whether he's too weak to implement it, whether on the contrary, he's still trying to weaken Russia because he wants to tie down Russia and Ukraine so he can finish his work in the Middle East or something of that. I mean, who knows? I mean, it really doesn't matter what is inside Trump's head. The fact of the matter is the Americans are also keeping the war going. They're continuing to impose sanctions on the Russians. They're continuing to provide Ukraine with intelligence. Without the intelligence assistance that Ukraine is getting from the United States, the war cannot continue. The war would be lost. They continue through the Europeans to supply weapons to Ukraine, even though doing that continues to deplete America's own arsenals on the brink of what could be a long war in the Middle East. So the Americans are keeping the war going. The Europeans are keeping the war going. And coming back to the Russians, for reasons that we will endlessly debate and can never ultimately come to a fully reasoned or satisfactory explanation for, the Russians persist in this charade of negotiations, even though they never in the end come down and make the concessions, any kind of concessions at all. In some ways, what Dmitriev has said, that the whole Bloomberg Economist story is fake news, is even more revealing than what actually happened with Medinsky in Geneva.
Yeah. Well, at least we've solved Nord Stream, or at least Spiegel has gotten closer to solving Nord Stream. So what's the story there? The CIA is okay. So they want us to believe, and they also say that Zaluzhny is the mastermind in all of this. So you may want to talk about what's going on with Zaluzhny and Zelensky as well, because that's started up again, this Zaluzhny-Zelensky fight. Yeah. But they want us to believe, Spiegel, that Ukraine approached the CIA and sought the CIA's assistance, monetary assistance and logistics assistance, as well as advice about the Nord Stream sabotage. And the CIA at first liked the idea, but then they thought about it and they tried to urge the Ukrainian team not to do it. They decided not to fund it, but the Ukrainian team found money elsewhere and they decided to go ahead with it against the wishes of the CIA. In a nutshell, that's the story that Spiegel wants us to believe. They also throw in Poland as well as helping out. Zaluzhny and Poland are all part of this effort to blow up Nord Stream. So they're kind of throwing Poland under the bus as well. But anyway, your thoughts.
Well, I'm going to say straight away, I mean, to me, it looks like BS, just to say this. I mean, straight away. I mean, it's interesting in that Spiegel, which is, of course, a German magazine and very much a mainstream German magazine, it's basically very closely aligned with The Guardian in Britain. I mean, the two work together. They know each other. They're very, very pro-Ukrainian. In other words, very, very anti-Russian. But it seems to me as if they're sort of tipping towards finally some admission that the Americans had some involvement in Nord Stream. So the Ukrainians supposedly come along, discuss this all with the CIA. The CIA says, what a great idea. Let's go ahead and do it. Then the Ukrainians do it after the CIA had said no. Then the Americans and others across Europe spread stories for several weeks, months, in fact. There was actually the Russians. So the CIA already knows that it was the Ukrainians, but they engage in a big disinformation exercise that lasts for several months, saying there was the Russians who blew up Nord Stream, though nobody ever gives any remotely plausible explanation why. I have to say to me, this all looks absurd. The idea that Ukraine, that Zaluzhny would press forward with an operation of this kind, which the Americans opposed, I simply cannot believe it. I think that at best, what might have happened, assuming that any part of this story is true, and I'm not sure that any of the details are true either, by the way, but perhaps the Americans said, you know, go ahead and do it, but we're going to distance ourselves from it. We're not going to be physically there, perhaps. Or it could be that the whole story is nonsense, that the, was it six guys, a girl and a boat, did it all together by themselves, is every bit as absurd as we've always thought. But Der Spiegel does seem to be finally telling people in Germany and in Europe, maybe the Americans were involved in some way after all. And that then begs the question, why? And maybe it's because of these tensions now between the US and Germany, which is starting to become increasingly obvious. I mean, I get the sense that Trump and Merz don't like each other very much, and the stresses of over economics, and Merz and Co. are not happy because some parts of the American administration seem to be fairly close to the IFDA. It could be something to do with that. But it might also be connected to Zelensky and Zelensky's own political ambitions. Because, as you're absolutely right, Zelensky is put there right at the center of this story. He, of all people, is supposed to have schemed, plotted to do all of this, even though he's working very closely with the Americans and then goes ahead and does it without the Americans. Anybody who knows anything about Zelensky would know that that is inconceivable. Zelensky would never act on anything against the Americans. He, more than almost any other figure in Ukraine, apart from Budanov, who basically works for the Americans, Zelensky would never go against what the Americans want. But anyway, Zelensky has now just given a very interesting interview to the London Times, which said that there was a major power struggle between him and Zelensky and Yermak in the early weeks of 2024. We talked about it extensively at the time. You remember one of Zelensky's lieutenants, senior lieutenants, was actually killed at that time when he was given a perfume, what he thought was a perfume bottle, or which was looked like a grenade, and tried to open it and it blew up on him. And it did look as if there was all sorts of stresses. Anyway, Zelensky has now come closer than he has ever done to saying that at that time, it looked like there was going to be an outright clash, military clash, that Zelensky and Yermak sent the SBU to raid Zelensky's own military headquarters, and that Zelensky threatened to bring the army into Kiev to protect his headquarters, which might suggest that there might even have been an actual plan of some kind for some kind of military coup, because we mustn't assume, by the way, that what Zelensky is telling us is the truth. So it looks as if Zelensky really was admitting that he had plans to bring troops from the front lines into Kiev, and that there was some kind of major showdown between him, Zelensky, and Yermak at that time. So I wonder whether this Nord Stream story might be connected to these revelations in some way, that the Europeans who continue to back Zelensky are spreading stories because they worry that the Americans are now trying to find some means to get rid of Zelensky, that they are tilting, maybe they're looking maybe again at getting Zelensky back. So they're spreading stories about Nord Stream, saying that the Americans were involved in Nord Stream, working with Zelensky, and that Zelensky himself, this perfect individual who is never involved in dirty war activities, that Zelensky knew nothing about it, and it was really all Zelensky's fault. And as I said, trying to build up Zelensky again against Zelensky and the Americans. I wonder whether this is what this is all about. But the key thing is, a German media magazine, whatever the motives, has finally acknowledged that the Americans had some role in the Nord Stream bombings.
True. Yeah, some role. Some role. Never mind Biden's statement with Olaf Scholz standing next to him.
Absolutely. I mean, as right. the account that's given still just doesn't make any kind of sense to me.
Yeah, it's difficult to figure out who blew up Nord Stream, Alexander. It's much easier to find out the Ecuadorian dart frog poison that took out Navalny.
Yeah. All right. I mean, all they have to do now, the only thing that's missing is the blowpipe.
Yes, they'll find that. They'll find that.
That's the only. That's the only thing that's
somewhere.
That's the only piece of the puzzle.
It's somewhere in Putin's office, I imagine. Absolutely. They'll get someone to smuggle it out, just like they found someone to smuggle out the samples of the dart frog poison. Anyway,
absolutely.
And it'll have Putin's fingerprints all over it. The pipe. All right, we'll leave it there. The Duran.locals.com. We're on X. We're on Rumble. We are on Telegram. Go to Duran Shop. Pick up some merch. And also go to Substack, where you will see our Substack as well. And $70 order and more on the Duran Shop. That's right. You get free shipping.
Absolutely.
I butchered the entire ending segment, the entire outro. But anyway, you guys get the picture. All right. See you tomorrow. Bye.